All right, good morning. Thank you for going up early, joining a session on drivers. It's a grand finale day of TechEd, but it's only the first session of a still full day with session, and then we have the big party tonight, so looking forward to that. This is the technical session on implementing successfully driver injections as part of your OS deployment story. So if there are any driver developers in the room thinking that this session is about developing drivers using the SDK or something, not going to happen. So we're simply going to work around some of the quirks, some of the issues I see customers run into, and provide you with workarounds and solutions for them. My name is Johan. I have been a deployment geek since I was about 16 years old. That's where I started to work as an IT pro. Used to go down to a local computer shop after school and help them assemble computers. So that's where I got in touch with deployment, and I have been doing it ever since. And that's about 2.5 decades now. I love questions, so if you have any questions throughout the session, feel free to just yell them out. Please raise your hand and then yell them out. I also am monitoring on this computer here the Twitter feed from the session. As you guys probably know, every session on TechEd will have a hashtag, and so does this session have. So if you tag it with this, I will be able to see it. I might not be able to answer all your tweets during the session because it's a bit messy to do two things at the same time, and I'm a guy, so it's even worse. But I'll try to. And if I don't can answer them all, I will make sure to answer them before I leave New Orleans tomorrow. Okay. That's a good slide. Right there. The first issue I've seen people run into is actually finding drivers, because that needs to be the first step that we do. We need to find them, we need to import them, and we need to deploy them. That's the order of things. But start by finding drivers. So where do you actually look for drivers? Where should be your first stop to look for drivers? That's a good song. The vendor, yeah, exactly. That should be your first job. If you're deploying HP, you go to HP. If you're using Dell, you go to Dell. If you're Lenovo, you go to Lenovo. Because these drivers, well, they're supposed to be at least the most tested drivers for that hardware that you're having. And also, if you do have an issue and you call the vendor and you say, well, I found some driver somewhere. Can you please help me? And they go, nope. But if you work with the vendor, they normally provide you with good drivers. All right, what if you cannot find drivers at the vendor? Or if you, for example, are using, you're deploying Windows to Go sticks, where you don't really know what model that Windows to Go stick is going to end up in, then what? Microsoft is a good option, but I will have this as number 3. I usually go for the vendor's vendor. So, for example, if it's an Intel NIC, I go to Intel. If it's a Broadcom, I go to Broadcom. If it's an NVIDIA card, I go to NVIDIA. Things like that. That's the vendor's vendor. And finally, why not simply go to Microsoft Catalog? Microsoft has a repository of every single driver ever passing through their qualification labs in Redmond, and you can download drivers from there as well. I sometimes use this catalog also to find what driver it is. Sometimes I go into Device Manager and I get like an unknown system or unknown device or base system device. I can simply look up from the plug and play ID on that site what it is. And then sometimes that information alone can help me find the right driver at the vendor rather than just sitting and guessing. So, all right, depending on vendor, you normally use a different tool set. So, if I'm working with Dell machines, I would simply go to the Dell website, because as you guys probably know, Dell maintains drivers per system as available as CAB files, so that if you need a driver for, well, whatever model, you can just download it directly, extract it, and use it. So they have drivers for most Windows 8 systems, for Windows 8, Windows 7, and Windows XP. And that's a good way to find the Dell drivers. They are not perfect, but they are good enough as a starting point. You might have to do some additional cleaning, because sometimes they are quite big. For example, I was downloading, I think it was the 6700. That packet was like 1.2 gigabyte in size. That's a pretty hefty driver package. But with some cleaning, you can reduce it a few hundred megs. So for HP, I normally do not go to their website, even though you could. I actually prefer to use their utility, which is called the SoftPack Download Manager, version 3, 4, something, whatever. The exciting thing about this utility is the protocol it's using by default, and that's FTP. And not all networks will allow FTP. So if your network doesn't allow FTP, you will see the utility just hang here for quite some time before it times out and gives you an error, say, I can't find the catalog. So what can you do if you cannot use FTP? Well, you will go into the help file for the utility, you will search for options to change protocol. You will find exactly nothing in that help file that can do that for you. So then you get creative and you fire up a command prompt and you learn by looking at the start screen shortcut where that utility is located, and then you find out that it's in this folder, Hewlett-Packard, SoftPack Download Manager. If I list the executable files, I will find that, all right, this is the executable, and normally I could just run a slash question mark, and it should, in a good way, reveal my available switches. Not going to happen. So then you get really creative, and you use tools like strings from sysinternals that allow you to take a command. Let me see if SoftPack Download Manager. And you can pipe it to a text file. Test.txt. And then you can open that text file in the right location. And command line. Turns out there is a function apparently in this utility that says read command line arguments. And these are the undocumented command line arguments. So if you start the utility slash force HTTP, it will actually use HTTP rather than FTP as a protocol. So that can be really helpful when trying to download stuff with this utility. So dash or slash force HTTP, and it will use that instead. Yes? If that's on my blog, no, it's my book. No, but this session is recorded as well, so it will be available there. Now, this utility is quite interesting because let me go and select, for example, filter for OS. And I'm going to select Windows, let's see here. I'm going to have Windows 7 Enterprise, and I will select Windows 8 Enterprise. And then I can select a model like this HP down here, because they list all their models. And I can find my drivers for Windows 8 and Windows 7. So how many Windows 8 drivers do you see here for this model? I would say quite a few, like none. So how come HP doesn't have a driver for this model for Windows 8? It's okay, it's not brand new, but it's not Stone Age either. I did check the box. Doesn't help if I check this box. Now, the trick here, according to HP, Windows 8 is apparently different than Windows 8. So you actually need to select Windows 8 edition in the tool, not the actual version. And then you get the drivers for both Windows 7 and Windows 8. There is no difference in drivers depending on Windows edition, except for RT, which you do not deploy anyway. But here I can find the 64-bit drivers for that model. I can say, go ahead and find available softpack, meaning drivers, and they will appear in the right-hand corner. And now I can select a few drivers that I want to, and I can select download, or I can say download and unpack. And it's normally this option you want to select when you want to import the drivers into either MDT or into Config Manager later on, because they need to be in extracted format. There is no point of using an .exe file. It won't use it. As you can see here, HP, like Dell, I actually didn't show you that, but let me scroll up here. Dell also provide you with drivers for the boot image. I'm going to show you that later, but in the boot image, we need NIC and storage, sometimes at least. And Dell provides special drivers for that. So does HP. So there is actually a WinPE client pack that will work with all of HP's models. It's a pretty good starting point. But anyway, I use this to download. I can also search here for hardware ID if I want to. I can type in the plug-and-play ID and it will find a driver. If I have Lenovo, I'm using their update retriever. And it has to be version 5 or later if you want to support Windows 8. In fact, it won't even start on Windows 8 or Server 2012 unless it's version 5. So in this utility, you add your models. It's not like a list that you select in the HP case or in the Dell website, but still you can add models. And in version 5, Lenovo actually added in an option to type in a product name here, a model, and you can select an OS. And how many of you think this will work? Click Add. Oh, sorry. You need to provide a valid machine type before you can continue. Okay, why did you add that field? When I still need to know the first four characters of my system before I can add it. Because that's how Lenovo does their models. They have a 7-digit number where the first four is the machine type that you need to add here. So you need to still go and find the model number, and it's not that difficult. You can open up a command prompt, and you can simply type something like this, and it will give you the model number. If it does also not know what, it will give me the 7-digit number, and you can check it out. Or in any way you like. PowerShell is cool too. So I will select the model. Save it, continue, and eventually it will present me with a list of drivers for this model, depending on internet speed. It's coming. And I can select a bunch of drivers and I can download them. Now, when you download drivers using this utility for Lenovo's, they come as either .exe files or MSI files. All right, so if you open up that repository that you get, it looks like this, and you will have an .exe file. Or sometimes you will even have a setup file with an explaining text file, what models that are supported and such. But if you open up the XML file that comes along with it, you actually learn the syntax to run that, whatever that is, silently, if you want to install that function from Lenovo. So there's no need to hide hunting around the internet to find switches when you have them available here. And even cooler, what you also can do is that I will cancel out of this. You can, once you download the drivers, you can go to Manage Repository and you can say Export Updates. And then you simply specify folder, you select the models, and you hit Export. Because when you do, they will end up in this structure instead. Flat, ready to be imported directly into MDT or Config Manager. Yes? So the question is, I show you that the Dell website for cab files. Have I tested around with their repository manager? No, I haven't. I know there it exists, but it's something I haven't used. So the follow-up comment is that utility have additional features for extracting, exporting, and importing into MDT and Config Manager. Yep, that might be. That's a good tip, but I haven't tested it, so I don't know. If Lenovo provides it with WinP4, I haven't set any ready-made kits from Lenovo for WinP4, but I know that the Dell ones works quite well for Lenovo's. They are mainly using the same type of network drivers, all of the vendors. Yes? So the comment was, all right, the driver packs that I get from Dell or HP, they are quite big. Even the WinP ones, yes, they are, because they support every model they have. Can you do additional cleaning? Should you? Yeah. There is no point of starting injecting drivers for hardware that you don't have. You just will bloat your boot image. And sometimes you can even make network boot at the time increasing because the image is big and it's more difficult to troubleshoot. So I actually recommend to pinpoint the stuff that you have. But I find the Dell website and that utility I show you a good source to find the drivers. So I don't have to hunt around everywhere for them. And sometimes you have a special driver in WinP. For example, the old Enforce chipset and some Broadcom cards, they actually have a two-tier driver that works great in Windows, but not so great in WinP. So they provide you with a special driver for WinP. The same goes for some of these USB 3 dongles, whatever they call it. They also have a special WinP driver. So by using the cab files for the boot images or the HP utility for the boot image, you find those drivers more easily. And they are tested in WinP, all of them. So that's nice. All right. So that was the vendor sites. Of course, you can go to Intel, Broadcom, and such and download from there directly. But you can also go to the catalog site, catalogupdatemicrosoft.com. And if you do, you can search for drivers. You can either search for it by name, if you need drivers for an authentic fingerprint, and it will list you all drivers for that authentic. And you can sort them by date or by version or something. And this is actually a good source to find Windows 8 drivers when the vendors may not yet have updated all their models for Windows 8 drivers. But sometimes you go into Device Manager, and it looks like this. You have like, all right, and 3 base system and unknown. Okay, this I can realize is an Intel management. This is probably a smart card reader or a card controller of some kind. But what's the difference between these and these? I have no idea. So you can go into the properties of a device. You can go to details. You can find the hardware ID. And then you get the plug and play ID where you can see the vendor and you can see the device. Even if you have an existing driver, for example, my video card here, it's a Quadro card. It's pretty good. Can play StarCraft on my server. It works good. I'm not kidding. I actually tested. And you can just copy and paste that ID. So I will copy it, and I will paste it, and I will receive... How many updates do you think? How many drivers for this NVIDIA card? None. Why? Because you need to do some cleaning. You cannot paste in the revision. You need to paste in only the vendor ID and the device ID. 4x4. then you get the drivers. And sometimes the latest driver is not the best driver. Sometimes you have to go back one version when troubleshooting. So this is a great way of quickly finding various versions of that driver so that you actually can test it. Or as I said, I sometimes use this to simply find out what it is. And by giving that name, I can search at the vendor site. So that was finding drivers. All right. Then what? What can you do to simplify things? Well, the world is changing constantly. This year, the pain point is UEFI machines. With drivers, of course. But what you can do to simplify life is not to buy that many models. Me and Kent, who's sitting over there, we did a pre-conference in Orlando last year on Config Manager. And we asked how many models they had as a sort of a minimum. And it was one company that answered two. They had two models. So I got curious, all right, how many are you? 10 people? 25,000. And they had two models. That's one end of the line. Then I had another customer who was actually in my session on Monday. I don't know if Quentin is here, but no, he wasn't. They had close to 300 models. And they were about 3,000 people. And of course there is a span here. It's easier to support two models than 300. I think we can agree on that. So what you can do, of course, is buy larger batches, keep same vendor for a while at least, and that will help your driver story as well. Don't mix and match too much, because that will simply add the time you need to spend with it. So maybe less frequent purchases and more larger batches when you buy them. Now, I used to do this session. I mean, this is the session that sort of never dies. Been doing that for 5-6 years now. I used to do it with Michael Niehaus, and then we had titled the session Dynamic Developer and the Control Freak. And I was the Control Freak. But you need to set something, because in the tools, in MDT and in Config Manager, by default, they are configured for what I call is total chaos, which is basically imported drivers and just hope for the best. That's the default behavior. On the other hand, you can be very specific and say, for this model, I want you to inject those 12 drivers, period. That's the other end of the spectrum. And of course, you can do anything in between. So it's all about trying to find a happy medium for you. That works good for you. I mean, if you have 5 models and you're a small company, well, if just importing drivers with the default configuration, then that works. There is no time need to spend some time on doing additional controls. The downside with the chaos thing is that if you change a single driver, you need to retest them all, because you don't really know what that driver update will actually cause. But on the other hand, if you have those 5 models, the likeliness that you are changing much is very little. The more stuff you have, the more important controlling the driver will become. So, I said before we need boot image drivers. So it's Windows PE now when we're using ADK. And if you're using, how many are using Config Manager in here? All right, about half the room. If you are on 2012 SP1, you are using WinP4, and WinP4 is using Windows 8 drivers. Even if you still deploy XP, don't, but if you do, it's still using Windows 8 drivers for the boot image. Most of you are probably deploying both Windows 7 and maybe piloting a few Windows 8s. You still need Windows 8 drivers in that boot image. Now, Windows PE4 is very like WinP3 in terms of drivers. So if you cannot find a Windows 8 driver, just go ahead and locate a Windows 7 driver. It normally works just fine. But start with the Windows 8 if you can find it. So do you need only NIC and storage in a boot image? Is that what you really need? Depends, yeah. But often the answer is yes. There might be other scenarios. For example, you're deploying servers and you want to do the RAID controller configuration, or you want to do firmware upgrades, or you want to flash BIOS, or you want to do BitLocker configuration on a machine or a client. Sometimes those utilities require additional, what I call health drivers, but drivers for the utility to actually work. If you're using older VMware platforms, you sometimes can see that in WinP3 and WinP4, the mouse actually stutters a little bit when you move it around, and by adding in the mouse driver for that platform, it's actually more smooth and follows along. Same goes with the remote cards from HP. If you have the older ILOs and newer WinP, you can sometimes see two cursors like this, and they just follow along on the screen, and it's really challenging to click the right spot. But once you add a driver for the ILO card in it, they will belong to one again, and they will run smoothly on the screen. So sometimes additional health drivers, mouse drivers and such, but that's exceptions. It's storage and NIC that we need. And then for the actual OS, of course, you need every driver. Why should you make sure that the device manager doesn't have exclamation marks? Imagine that you have a fingerprint reader. You don't use it. So why should you bother about having the driver for it? One thing, it doesn't look nice when you open up Device Manager. That's good enough for me. But a second reason is, if you don't have a driver for a device, Windows may not be able to manage it or power manage it. So if you have a laptop or a slate device, not having the drivers will actually can cause the battery from draining out quicker than it had to be. So make sure you add those drivers in, even if you don't use the actual device. Now, I'm going to demonstrate two deployment solutions in here. I'm going to do light touch, how we do drivers, and I do the exact same thing for Config Manager, because it's about 50-50 of the people in the room who has a Config Manager. Now, in LightTouch, the free standalone deployment solution, it's also by default total chaos. But we can use filters, profiles, and properties, rules, to determine what drivers we are going to add. So let me see or show you how that looks. So I'm going to my LightTouch server. In this deployment chair, or this workbench, I have two deployment chairs. One that I use for reference images. I don't add any drivers to that one. But the one I'm actually using in production for all my models, that's the one I use and add drivers in. So let's start with the boot image drivers. By default, MDT will happily inject every storage driver and every network class driver you add into the console. It will add to the boot image. So if I go to some of my drivers here that I have, how many of them are network drivers? Well, you can see it on the class, or you might see it from the name of it. But what I recommend that you guys do is actually creating a folder for WinP drivers only. And of course, you only add the boot image drivers into that folder. Because for an HP EliteBook, I might add a wireless driver. And wireless is a network class driver. And if I don't do this, by default, MDT will happily inject that wireless driver into the boot image. I don't know how many of you that actually do wireless deployments, but it's a bad idea. And in fact, Windows PE will try to load that driver. And sometimes that takes so long, so it times out, and the machine doesn't get an IP address, even though you actually also have the correct driver in it. So I create a folder, and I make sure to only add my boot image drivers into that folder. After I have done that, I create a selection profile. And in that selection profile, I simply select the corresponding folder. So I name it WinP something, and I select the WinP something folder. So this is the filter. creating folders, creating filters, and then I will go into my deployment share, hit WinP, go to drivers, and say for my 32-bit platform, go ahead and use that profile. And by the way, use all drivers from that profile. So even if you do add a mouse driver or a health driver, it will actually add them as well. By default, it will do this, as I said, but since you are having a folder now with WinP drivers only, you can just say, grab them all. And the same story for the 64-bit one, of course. Then you select the 64-bit profile. And then, when you update the deployment share, MDT will now update and inject those drivers only into the boot image. So that's how you get the control over the drivers that goes into your boot image. All right. And then we have the Windows drivers. What you can do is simply go to drivers directly, right-click and import. You can import them into one bunch. I recommend that to at least create one folder and import the drivers there so that you know that this is your folder for Windows 8 drivers. Now, if you do that, just right-click and import. By default, MDT will do a plug-and-play ID scan during deployment, and it will actually download the drivers that is matching the plug-and-play ID, and it will inject them into the store. For the past 8 or 9 years, there has been no reason whatsoever, no matter what OS you're deploying, assuming it's Windows, to inject drivers into the WIM file that you have, into your image. Drivers is something that you add during deployment. You have something detecting what drivers are needed and being injected into the deployment. And by default, Light Touch is using plug and play. Total chaos. What if you have a two-tier driver, or you have a... I wouldn't talk bad about any vendor, but Sigmatel sound cards, they are not detected correctly through plug and play because they are two-tier. Some of the Vodafone mobile broadband adapters they have in laptops, they are not detected correctly either. So plug and play will find one driver, but the device needs two. So that's why you still have an exclamation mark after the deployment is completed. But if it works, it works, and life is good. All right, what can you do to be more in control? Well, for example, if you're deploying both Windows 7 and Windows 8, you can create one folder for Windows 8 and one folder for Windows 7. And then you can create a selection profile, one for Windows 8 and one for Windows 7. Then in your sequence that you use to deploy whatever you're deploying, in this case Windows 8, you can go into the step that actually injects drivers and say, all right, for this sequence, which is deploying Windows 8, please look in the Windows 8 folder only for drivers. So this is narrowing it down a bit. Now this sequence will not look in the Windows 7 driver folder for drivers. So that's one step more. Now what you also can do is simply create more folders. In this case, I have created one folder for each model that I have. I have two for my normal models. I have one for extra stuff like keyboard and scanners and phones and cameras and printers and whatever I would like to add as well. But at least I have one folder per model. And then I simply add the drivers for that model in that folder. I will right-click and I will say import. Even if I have, if I make a copy and copy drivers to another model, they are not stored twice. They are stored only once in the file system. This is just a logical view of the drivers. So you may have a 40 gig driver store, and when you import it into MDT, it becomes like 15 gigs, because many models will have the same driver. But it's just the view of it here that you can see what driver it's using. Now, to get MDT to use folders, you will have to go to the sequence again. And then you have to set a property called driver group like this. You give it the top folder, and then you replace the second level folder structure with percent model percent. Because when you do a deployment, and I can actually simulate one for you. Can't type either. When you start a deployment, MDT, as well as Config Manager, actually knows what model you have. It's one of the many properties it learns about your machine. And if you, in your sequence, add in percent model percent, you only need to name the folder correctly, and then we will have a match. So as long as the folders are named correctly in the workbench, and you have this option, those drivers will be the only drivers that are considered. Assuming you also go down here and say you don't want any driver, and you disable plug and play. That's the ready button for disable plug and play. I actually filed a bug against that label because I don't think it's clear. To me, it doesn't say disable plug and play. It says something completely different. But you need to select nothing because otherwise it will also look in other folders for drivers. And if you're doing a per model injection, you really want it to only look in that folder. So this is the only thing you need to do. And now when you do a deployment, all right, it will only add in those drivers. If you want to add additional drivers, you can add additional properties and, for example, specify another folder with your common stuff or extra drivers or whatever. And that's the only thing you need to do. You do not need to update the production share if you add drivers for the OS. It's only if you add drivers for the boot image when you need to do the update here. Yes, sir? By default, that the question is, that property, is that the model from WMI? Yes, that's the default behavior. But I'm very happy you asked that question, because what if you are having a Lenovo? Or a Panasonic, or a Toshiba, or a Fujitsu Siemens. In short, anything but HP and Dell. Can you count on the model name being correct? No. Which is the better model name? 4178BG9 or ThinkPad T420? In my opinion, it's the ThinkPad T420. That's the model name to me. So what you can do is you can configure MDT to extend its inventory. So if you go to, either my blog or Deployment Bunny, that blog site, or the Deployment Guys blog site or blog, you can download a model alias script which adds additional intelligence into the driver or model detection. And when you have such script, where did my folder go? Here. Let me see. There we go. This script simply contains additional logic that will detect if it's a Lenovo or a Dell, or would replace it with other functions to look up the model name. So, for example, if it's a Lenovo, it will call another function, set model alias, and use that function. So it will call the system product table instead to get the real name. But you don't really have to know this. You have to know that if you use this script, you will get additional names. So when you add this script into your INDE file, you simply go back to your workbench again, and instead of
using percent model, you set percent model alias,
because now that will be the correct name. So by downloading that script and configure your ini file to use it, you can actually get a better naming for the folders. Otherwise, you will have to name the folders to whatever the model is. And yes, this works in Config Manager too, for those of you who have that. All right. So the question is the key to use that exact name? Yes, that's the property you should use for drivers. You can have multiple ones, of course, but you need to start with driver group 001 there. It's the property MDT looks for and knows about. Okay. So what about Config Manager then? In the previous releases in Config Manager 07, you could actually use or take advantage of a bug, which I call the feature because I liked it, and I rarely like bugs, but that bug I liked, where you can actually create driver packages directly from a folder in the file system. You can simply say to Config Manager, hey, go ahead and deploy that package for this hardware, please. I didn't have to do an import or anything, and I just loved that. Guess what? They fixed that bug in CMO 12. So you can't do that anymore. You really have to import drivers. It's not entirely bad, because there is one advantage, one big advantage when importing drivers. You actually get them validated. In CMO 7, it was actually really easy to create the driver package, point it to a folder, and the drivers in that folder, they were broken. And you didn't know about it until you actually deployed it. Then you learned, but now when you have to import them, it does a validation. Now, there are room for improvements in that import process, because I was working with one customer, and we had a pretty large repository of drivers. And even though I was using a PowerShell script to import them, and by the way, 1 minute before this session started, I posted that script to my blog. So if you want that PowerShell script that imports drivers, you can download it from there. It's a massive script. It's several kilobytes in size. So deployment research, then you can download the script. Now, it took me 9 hours to import the drivers using that script. Doing the same operation in LightTouch, 1 hour. So the parsing mechanism can be improved in terms of speed, but on the other hand, it works. So, all right, I left for a day and come back the next day. That's fine. So you need to import drivers in Config Manager, but you still have different methods that you can apply them to. The default is total chaos. Among all the drivers that you have imported into Config Manager, it will try to do a plug-and-play ID scan during deployment, and it will try to inject those drivers. Now, we can limit what I did in LightTouch with selection profiles, the filters, I can do in Config Manager. It's called categories. So I can limit using categories, even though I am using plug-and-play detection. But I can also create driver packages still per model. And that's actually my recommendation as well for Config Manager 12. The only difference is I need to import them first. So auto-apply will do plug-and-play detection. Apply driver package will not do plug-and-play detection, but rather inject the drivers that you tell it to inject. And if you use the second option here, you can actually stage other drivers than only plug-and-play ID based, like I was talking about printers, scanners, smart card readers, stuff like that, that may not be present when you deploy the machine and therefore cannot be detected when you deploy run the sequence. The cool thing about Windows 7 and Windows 8 is that Windows 7 and Windows 8 has a driver store. Windows XP didn't. And you as admins can stage drivers into that store during deployment using, well, either LightTouch or Config Manager. But if you're using Apply Driver Package, you can stage drivers that are to be used later. So if the user eventually plugs in his or her phone into the machine, the driver is already there. And since it's Windows 7 and Windows 8, a normal standard user can actually install that driver, because it's not the user that installs the driver. It's the local plug-and-play service, the local system account, that does that installation. The only time it will really, really break is if your driver, HP, is calling a co-installer that is supposed to run a setup, because there's supposed to be an application running in the system tray that will play a tune when you print something or say something, page 5, printed, things like that. Then you need to be admin, because you need to run that setup. But if you have a good driver, normal driver, no problem. All right, so how do we do this in Config Manager? Well, let's go to Config Manager server and find out. In CMO 7, you could actually create folders in your driver repository, and you can organize them very nicely, exactly as I showed you in LightTouch. Now in CMO 12, well, you can still create folders. That you can do. But you cannot right-click a folder and say import, because that function is grayed out. So if you still want to use folders, you actually have to import the drivers first, and then select a bunch of them, and then move them to a folder. And that's fine if you have like 39 drivers, but if you have 3,900 drivers, it's challenging to find them and move around into folders. So a better option in CMO 12 is not to use that many folders anymore, but rather tag them during import. So when I go to drivers here and I do import, if I go to a folder where I have some drivers, here we go. This is where I can tag them and say that the drivers I'm importing now, please assign one or more categories to it. And as you can see here, I'm tagging the driver with a specific category. And the beautiful thing here, I don't care so much about what naming convention you're using, but if you actually specify OS family, or in this case, the model, you can search for that in the console later. So if I will click next, next, finish, those drivers will be imported. And once they are imported, I can now, for example, do a search for 8560. And it will show me all the drivers that has an 8560. And now I can select them all, or a bunch of them, depending on what I want to do, and I can add them to a driver package. I can also create the driver package during import, so they automatically get added to the correct package. So what I recommend doing in Config Manager is actually having one driver package per model. And if I go to one of these packages, double-click it, or I can right-click and say Show Members, it will list the device drivers that is for that package. Now, a bit of a warning. Me and Kent, we did a pre-conference on Sunday, and we talked about this then, but if you have a driver here and you delete it, it will be deleted from every package using that driver. So you may have many models that is using the same driver, because Config Manager, as well as LightTouch, still single instance. Even if you see the driver in many packages, it doesn't mean it's occupying three times the space in the file system. What you should do instead, if you need to remove a driver from a package, is right-click the driver or drivers, say Edit, go to Driver Packages, and then you simply select or clear the packages you don't want that driver in. So be careful when deleting drivers. Or if you really want to delete it,
click usage first to see what packages is actually using that driver so you don't get surprised. Okay. So importing and tagging is important because once we have categories, we can do magic. We can admit the packages, or I can do the midway. If I have a sequence here, let me take my Windows 8 sequence. I can either use the default plug and play option, and in that action I can say, all right, but please limit it to the following category. So if I had a category for Windows 8 only, and I've tagged all my Windows 8 drivers with Windows 8, it will only look in the Windows 8 driver when it did their injection. You can also programmatically set categories in a script so you can detect what model you have and you can set it there. But I actually prefer to disable this option and instead create the drivers node and start adding in driver packages. So here I've added my HP 8560 package. It's adding packages is just adding here or copy and paste. And then you can select your second package. And you continue to add packages until you have them all added. Now, for this package, I recommend to set the condition. So I'm setting a condition here to only add drivers from that package, assuming this WMI query evaluates the true. I'm using like here, because sometimes HP, in their model names, will add a revision number to it, a key, something like this. You may have four or five different models that is the same hardware, but the model name is actually different. But by using like, I'm saying look for this string in this WMI class and use that as a condition. So that would mean I will use that for HP. For Lenovo's, I would use this. Because by querying again system product, I will get this one in return instead of this. If I have Panasonic, I recommend using the baseboard, because baseboard will actually return the correct model name for Panasonic. And sometimes it says XP storage, but I could actually add in home built stuff. I was talking to one of the attendees on Monday where they were building their own machines and they didn't have a model name. There was no way in WMI through a name identify the computer. But what you then can do is actually use plug-and-play entity, where you can specify one or more devices and say, all right, you don't have a name, computer, but you probably have a bunch of devices. And if the following five devices are found, it's probably this machine. And then you can add drivers to that. I can see you taking pictures, and that's nice, but this one is broken. Why is it broken? This WMI query will fail. It's stored using double backslashes, two of them. That's how it's being read. So as long as you have that, it will work. Just a tip. But what you also can do is you can take the same script that I was showing you before, the model alias script. You can add it to the config manager init file. And it's quite easy to actually
at it.
You take the name of the script and you add it in. And once you do, you can start to use it in the other sections. So that means that if I add that script, I can go to Config Manager, and instead of using this query, I can say, all right, instead use the condition sequence variable model alias equals HP EliteBook 8560V. And this to me looks a bit cleaner, because now I'm taking the intelligence and I'm putting it in a script that the gather process is reading, and then I'm simply using the result as conditions for my actions. Either way will work, but this I think is a little bit cleaner, but it's up to you guys. But this is how I recommend that you actually add in drivers into a config manager. If you have a massive amount of models, LightTouch doesn't really care. Config Manager sort of does. Because once you start adding in hundreds of packages into a sequence, they all have policies that need to be generated, and it can really put a load on the server. So if you do have more than 100, maybe start combining a few of the models into a bit larger packages. It's a bit more testing, but it's still doable. Or throw the old crap away and reduce the number of models. Yes, sir? In LightTouch, you put it in the scripts folder of the deployment share. In Config Manager, you put it in the MDT toolkit package. That's the difference. But the same script, same ini file, same everything. For LightTouch, you specify it in the custom settings ini file. For Config Manager, you specify it in the custom settings ini file, not in the Bootstrap. The beauty of having it in the custom settings ini file, it's always being read from the server. The Bootstrap lives in the boot image, and I try to put as little there as possible. Because if I do a change to that, I will need to update my boot image, and I don't want to have to do that just because I changed something, a setting on the server. So the ini file on the server is much better to put it in. And when you download the example script, you also get an accompanying example ini file, because you need to add a few more sections than I had, and then just referencing that script. I think I can actually show you one here if you want to see it. I usually carry around a few. Okay. Here we go. So this is a model alias script. This is the ini file. So I simply add the call to the ini file to run the script and call the functions. That's the only thing you need to add. But again, the ini file is along with the VB script, so copy and paste, steal with pride. It's nice. All right. Now, there are quite many things that can go wrong. First of all, not drivers are equal. Some drivers cannot be only injected at deployment time. They need to be installed as applications. So you need to download the apps from the vendor and add them as normal applications that you have as part of your deployment. For HP, if you open the CVA file that comes with the driver, you will get the command line syntax to install it silently. For Lenovo, you open up the XML file and you get the command line syntax. For Dell, might be in that repository thing you talked about, but you need to figure out the command line switches for their applications, because they're not in the driver. Could be in the README file or text file, but it depends on the driver.
Now, they have to be installed later in the process. Other drivers are being injected in the boot image during WinP, but these applications need to be installed at restore time, or state restore time. And also, what about updating drivers? Well, my theory, which is based on 25 years of experience, is that updating drivers in general is a bad idea. If it's working, don't touch it. I never go to a customer site and update every driver on every system just because there are new drivers available on the website. Not gonna happen. I update the driver if it's needed. If I have a problem with an Intel wireless car driver on some of my systems, yeah, I create the package and I deploy it. There is no function in Config Manager or in LightTouch that will update drivers. You have to create an application and push that application out, or run that application if you're doing LightTouch, or push it through PSXX. That's also possible. But yeah, that's how you do it. If you don't have a package from the vendor, you only have the driver, you can actually download the driver installation framework from Microsoft, dpinst, and you can create your package on your own and deploy it. Intel is, for example, packaging their drivers using that framework, and it's a free download from Microsoft. Now, if I go over to my demo environment here, LightTouch and Config Manager is injecting drivers in the same way. And by knowing the process, you can actually troubleshoot this much, much quicker. So first of all, there are three steps, but the first step is that the sequence, and again, same LightTouch, same Config Manager, the sequence will copy drivers to the C drive. That copying is, of course, depending on which method you used. If you used our plug and play, it will do the data detection or create a list of drivers to copy. If you use the apply driver package, you can take those drivers and copy. But one way or another, the drivers that you have selected are going to be copied. Then, a bit later, DISM will be called, or SEDAM will call DISM, depending on deployment. But that component will actually inject the driver into the driver store. And then, this is still in WinP, and then the machine will reboot, and eventually the setup will actually install the driver. This is the flow. Now, is there any point whatsoever for me to troubleshoot these two actions if the driver was never copied to the C drive? Not very good idea to troubleshoot those steps then, no. So how can we troubleshoot this step? If it's LightTouch, we can look in the BDD log file. That's one option. If it's Config Manager, I can look in the SMSTS log file. Or keep it simple, stupid. KISS. Look on the C drive. Search for the driver. If you can't find it, it's not there. If it's not there, it will not be injected and it will never be installed. And then you will have to go back and check your sequence. Maybe you did a typo. Maybe you got your WMI query wrong. Maybe something is wrong in this repository. You might even have the wrong driver. You might be missing the driver. So that you can do. All right, how do you troubleshoot the next step then? You can see it was copied, but later on when you go into Device Manager, it's still an exclamation mark for that driver. How can you troubleshoot step number two? DISM log, yes. And DISM is using the component-based servicing stack in Windows, so you also have the CBS log file. And one more. You can look in the driver store. If it's not there, it wasn't injected, that's correct. But there is one more file that can help you troubleshoot why it's not in the store.
Set up act log. It's been around since XP, but this log file is actually the main setup log file for Windows 7 and Windows 8. And that file can also sometimes yield a clue to why it wasn't injected. In 11 times out of 10, it's a broken driver. Just because it passes the import step, it doesn't mean it will work. In rare cases, I have actually seen the scratch space size on the boot image. For example, in LightTouch, I didn't show it, but I can show you now. By default, the scratch space size, the temporary size that is used in WinP during driver injection, is actually 32. And sometimes drivers, NVIDIA, are bigger than 32. They are like 80. And it turns out it's difficult for Windows PE to fit a 80 meg driver into a 32 meg buffer, and it breaks. So just by increasing that scratch space, you can avoid that problem. But again, these log files will tell you that. Couldn't inject because of, boom, ran out of disk space. Config manager doesn't have that problem because config manager is actually pointing the temp variable to the C drive or whatever drive you have the OS on and uses that as temporary storage. And if you run out of space on that one, you have more problem than just drivers. So LightTouch, remember to set the scratch space. Config manager, not so much important for drivers, but I do recommend it to set it for other things because script and stuff that you do in the boot image, well, they may have to use that space. All right, we assume the driver was actually injected, and then you go into Device Manager, and it's still yellow. How do you troubleshoot the last step? What log file? If it's Windows 7, you can look in this log file, setup api.dev.log. It will tell you every single driver that has been installed since you deployed the machine until up to today. If it's Windows 8, it's that log file and or this one, which is new in Windows 8. And this is depending on the driver. Why they decided to have different drivers reporting to different log files, I don't know. But you simply have to look into two different folders, files when searching for why it failed. So I will give you an example. I have it right here somewhere. In this example, Windows found one matching driver in the store. And obviously, it selected the best matching driver, single one. And I mean, when you only have one driver in the store, there is a little argument by the setup what driver to actually install. That's the only one available. All right, I take that one. But often, you will see that you have, sometimes it will find two or more drivers in the store that as it's matching your hardware. And of course, it's still picking the best one. So here I actually have two drivers. Which is the best driver? Top one or bottom one? The info is right here that tells you exactly what drivers is going to be used. Sorry? Both are signed. The time in this case will actually have nothing to do with it. But it's a good one. Rank, yes.
I was hoping you were going to say version, because then I could say that you're wrong, but it's not using version either. That's very low in the ranking process, because vendors have an odd way of versioning sometimes. They can have one driver being version 4.9, and then the next version could be like 8.6. But it's actually the ranking score. Every driver gets a ranking score. So this standard VGA driver, this one here, will have, this ranking score. Let me do Notepad instead. Notepad is better. And the other driver, the S3 adapter, or Hyper-V graphics card, can't even copy and paste, doing well, has the following score. And in driver ranking, lower is winning. And since this value is in hex, well, this is actually lower than this. Sorry? Ranking comes from, the setup mechanism that detects which driver. It's documented on MSDN in core details, but shorthand story is the first two characters is signed. If the driver is signed, it's a double zero, and it's hard to beat the double zero when low is the winning value. The next two is the feature score, and that's something you get from the actual driver. If a driver doesn't have a feature score, it will be a double F. Most inbox drivers are double F, and double F is a pretty bad value in hex when low is winning. So in this case, because the driver had a feature score that was lower than the other, it actually won this race. I mean, if you open up a repository of drivers, I have a few drivers here. Intel, for example, they have a feature score of 80 for most of their drivers. So in the driver, you will actually see they have a score. And in general, a vendor will have more ranking in their image than a inbox driver would. And if they have the same, it's the final four, which is the plug-and-play number, how well it's matching that. I mean, a device in Device Manager, if I go with my graphics card again, a driver that is matching this one will be better than this one. So in rare cases, you actually need to modify the driver to make it better until the vendor fixes it. But what happens when you change a single byte in a driver? You break the signing. And then suddenly, it won't be used because of that. 64-bit Windows will freak out, and Windows 32-bit will just put it last in queue, or last in line. What you can do is go to my blog, search for drivers, and you find this article, which is a step-by-step procedure, 5 steps, what tools to download, and how to sign your drivers yourself if needed. If you need to do a change, then you can still fix it. All right. If you go to this site, you will find additional resources for deployment, books, trainings, videos, stuff like that. My blog has some 50 videos available for free for download. I have been told to ask you to fill in the evaluation. And as always, be honest, but gentle. And have a great party tonight and a great TechEd. Thank you.